You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2009, the 16th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Montreal, Canada, from February 8th through February 11th, 2009.
In this study summary, Igor Grant of the University of California, San Diego, discusses the results of the CHARTER study of HIV-associated neurocognitive impairment in the era of combination antiretroviral therapy. After the discussion, there will be a series of questions and answers.
The CHARTER study was designed really to take a detailed look at the question of whether the brain effects of HIV are as well controlled as are the other medical complications of HIV in the context of modern treatments. As the previous speakers have noted, mortality and many other kinds of HIV disease-related variables have declined with modern treatments. But there have been some suggestions that this is not so true of the brain disease that's associated with HIV. And so the CHARTER study was designed to answer or at least address this question. The CHARTER study consists of detailed examinations of almost 1,600 patients who were attending clinics at six different university medical centers. And the data were collected in a systematized way and then analyzed. And the findings are as follows. First, that there is still a fairly high rate of neurocognitive impairment in HIV-infected persons who are receiving antiviral treatment. What do I mean by neurocognitive impairment? This is a disturbance in functions such as learning, remembering, planning, making decisions, attentional abilities, concentration. Those kinds of skills are under neurocognitive. In addition, a subset of these patients received brain imaging studies, including studies of the structure of their brains and whether there might be the presence of abnormal signal in the brain. And it was also found that about a third of these patients, most of whom, as I say, were receiving treatment, had some evidence of brain disease based on brain imaging. And a third variable that was looked at is peripheral neuropathy symptoms. Now, peripheral neuropathy symptoms include burning, tingling, pain, and other kinds of discomfort, primarily in the feet, but also can affect the hands and arms. And again, about a half or a little bit more of the patients in CHARTER had these problems. And in this case, they were related to some degree to the kinds of specific treatments they received, such as a type of drug called the D-drugs. In coming back to the brain involvement, we also tried to look at, well, are there some things about the disease or the person that particularly predicts who is at risk for these neurocognitive complications? And the findings were that one important predictor was something called nadir CD4 count. Now, nadir CD4 count refers to the lowest level of CD4 that a person has experienced at some point. Not what it is now, but the lowest at some point in time. So that was associated with likelihood of cognitive impairment. Put another way, people who never had severe immunosuppression and whose treatment also was effective in eliminating virus from plasma, those people were least likely to have the brain impairment. So the implications of the study could be that there may be events that perhaps occur early in the course of infection, such as severe immunosuppression that may later rebound, but that still leaves a legacy or an effect, a reverberation on the brain. And that may, if that were true, that would raise the question of whether treatment guidelines might need to be adjusted in order to begin earlier, more aggressive treatment. Again, the study wasn't designed to answer that question. That's an implication that may be raised.
This study included, it's a community study, essentially. A lot of the people in the study, if I read the abstract correctly, were not, you know, had viral loads greater than 50 copies per mil. Can you sort of talk a little bit about how viral load, as opposed to the CD4 count, how viral load affects your results? Is it more likely with a higher viral load that people will have dementia?
Yeah, this is kind of a complicated issue. We've looked both at plasma viral load and viral load in the cerebrospinal fluid. And it looks to be the case that if there is persistent viral replication in the cerebrospinal fluid, that is more likely to be associated with the presence of these neurocognitive impairments. And what the charter found in particular was that there is a group of patients in whom plasma viral load is undetectable. But if you use a very sensitive assay, you can still detect virus in the cerebrospinal fluid. And in those people, neurocognitive impairment was somewhat more likely. But the relationships are complex, to say the least, and it's not possible just to kind of say, well, if this is high, therefore you're going to have more neurological problems. I think the main, though, finding from Charter is that, you know, 40 to 50% of people who, you know, are receiving very good treatment still have these neurocognitive complications. So there's some kind of divergence between the process going on in the brain and what's going on in the rest of the body. And that's a serious issue.
Could you talk a little bit about how well specific drugs penetrate the CNS and how that might affect cognitive impairments? Because we know that some drugs in a regimen penetrate very well, others do not, but I haven't seen a good sense as to, you know, a listing of what goes in and what doesn't go in.
Right. And there's been quite a lot of interest in this topic. In fact, Dr. Scott Letender and Ron Ellis and other investigators in our group have been looking at that in some detail. Just as a general rule, the NNRTI drugs are fairly well penetrating into the CNS, whereas most protease inhibitors are poor penetrators. And then drugs like zidovudine are somewhere in between. Dr. Letender and his group have looked at the relationship of neurocognitive impairment and what are called CPE scores, these penetration scores. And there is a modest association. That is, people on better penetrating drugs, first of all, are more likely to have undetectable viral load in the cerebrospinal fluid, and also they are somewhat less likely to have cognitive impairment. So, but I would say the effects are there, but not gigantic.
Are there any other things that might show up as being modifiable for people who are dealing with some sort of cognitive impairment or possibly small dementia?
Yeah, that's a very important question. So in addition to HIV disease variables themselves, there are a number of other factors that can contribute to the likelihood of cognitive impairment. One is substance abuse. And so not within Charter so much, we didn't have a huge number of these, but in other studies, it's been shown that methamphetamine abuse increases the likelihood of impairment, cognitive impairment in HIV-infected people. So that's one important factor. And another one is hepatitis C co-infection. Hepatitis C, in some studies, particularly a study we're involved with in China, where people were HCV positive but HIV negative, they had more cognitive impairment. And in some of the American studies, we see, again, this increasing risk of cognitive impairment in people who are both hepatitis C and HIV infected. So those are two examples. Other possibilities are that people who've had neurodevelopmental or other kinds of neurological injuries earlier, unrelated to HIV, that may also increase the risk, although that hasn't been as well studied so far.
You did some brain scan work, I think, in this population. Not everybody, but a proportion. Can you tell us what that investigation found? I mean, is there serious atrophy in brain tissue, or how is it correlated? Stuff like that.
Right. So we have found is, first of all, if you do the if you do careful what are called morphometric measures, which is being able to measure the thickness of the gray matter of the brain, for example, the volume of white matter, and so forth, there seems to be a reduction in the volumes of these compartments in the brain as disease progresses. And secondly, another thing one sees is that abnormal signal, which probably reflects small areas of inflammation, increases with HIV disease. And these are also related to the degree of cognitive impairment. So the amount of brain shrinkage and both cortical and white matter loss, and also loss of deep gray matter, basal ganglia, for instance, all of these effects are seen in HIV, and they do have a relationship to cognitive impairment. Another kind of imaging data that Charter looked at is called spectroscopy, which is looking at certain kinds of metabolites in the brain that are thought to reflect certain processes in the brain. So, for example, there's a metabolite called N-acetylaspartate, NAA, which is thought to reflect the integrity of the neurons themselves. That signal goes down with HIV disease. There's another marker called myo-inositol, which is thought to reflect inflammatory processes, at least in part. That signal tends to go up. And then again, there are relationships between likelihood of cognitive impairment and those kinds of brain imaging changes as well. So I don't know if that addresses that question. I'm happy to spell out all those molecules later if anybody wants.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thank you for listening to this report from CROI 2009. For more coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2009.